Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. Jane Berkey is interviewing Charlotte Reisenstein Rosenberg on January the 21st, 1976. Now, tell me your husband's name and tell me about when you met and a little bit about your courtship and what times in general at that time were like.
My husband's name is Jack Rosenberg. And I met him when the year that he was graduating from the University of Pittsburgh. And I was studying at the university in the art department. The times were not too good. This was following the Depression. I had come back from being at school in New York because it was too expensive for me to be there any longer. I had been studying at the Art Students there. And
where was that located in
New York? On 57th Street. It was really a very bad school for me. I had graduated from Peabody High School and had won a scholarship to Carnegie Tech at that time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go there. I wanted to go to New York. And I felt, in later years, I felt my parents should have made me really accept that scholarship, because that was, aside from it being a scholarship, it was the best art training that you could get. And I was really much too young to go to New York to school and live there on my own.
Where did you live when you were there?
I lived at a place called the Parnassus Club. And this might be very interesting, by the way. I had my first anti-Semitic experience, and one of the very few that I've had in my lifetime. My mother had written to New York and had inquired as to places to live. She'd gotten a list from the Art Students League of places where she could inquire. And we had selected a very nice sort of residential, it was a boarding house or apartment where a woman took in girls who were going to school. It was sort of, I think, probably a little fancy. And my mother and I went, and we had a lovely interview. And we were ready to finalize the arrangements. And when the woman asked Mother her name, we had just gone there cold. And Mother gave her name, Mrs. Charles Reisenstein, and the woman got a very peculiar expression on her face. And she said, "Are you by any chance Jewish?" And my mother said, "Yes, we are." And the woman drew herself up and said, "Well, we don't take Jews here." And this was quite a blow to both of us. So we followed up other leads, and we ended up at the Parnassus Club.
This was in the early 30s? You had to give it a...
Let me see. I can tell you exactly. About 1929, this was. That was when I went to New York. And I lived in New York for about 2 years. And then I had to come home. And I continued my education at the university. I met Jack at an SAM fraternity dance. I had gone with another boy, and I had a very interesting first meeting with my husband. He came over to me. I was dancing with somebody else, and he came over to me and cut in. And the very first words he said to me were, "You don't know it, but you're going to marry me someday." And I looked at him as though he were crazy, and I said, "Who are you?" And then, of course, he told me who he was. And 6 years later, we were married.
What year was that?
What year were we married?
Mm-hmm.
We were married in 1935. I guess it wasn't 6 years later. I guess I must have gone to New York sooner than that, because this doesn't, I just had my 40th anniversary, which means that we were married in 1935. I guess about 4 years, I guess.
Is that what, November?
November 10th, 1945. And Jack was just in his senior year at the university and preparing to go into law school, which he did the following year. And the law school course at that time was 4 years. And when he graduated, and after he took his bars, shortly thereafter we were married. First year we were married, I think our Jack's total income was $900, which I think is kind of interesting. Now, he came from an entirely different background than I came from. I came from an ultra-reform background. He came from a very orthodox background. And this opened up a whole new world for me. As I think back on it, it's inconceivable to me that I could have gone to a synagogue from the time I was old enough to go to Sunday school and be confirmed and continue to go occasionally with my mother to the synagogue, and yet know absolutely nothing about Orthodox Judaism. I really knew nothing about it.
Where did his family live?
His family lived in Squirrel Hill.
And they obviously attended an Orthodox shul?
Yes, his mother did.
Mm-hmm. Do you happen to know where?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure at all. I'd like to add this note, that his mother and my mother became fast friends, which is, I think, rather unusual. They really liked each other. And eventually my mother and father moved into the building that Jack's mother owned. It was a duplex. And Jack's mother lived on the first floor, and my mother and father, when they sold their house, moved into the second floor of that duplex, and they lived there in perfect harmony for many years.
Tell me about your children.
I have only one daughter, who's interviewing me right now. Her name is Jane Berkey.
And your grandchildren?
And I have two grandchildren. My granddaughter is the oldest of the two. She'll be 13 this year, and my grandson is 8.
Now, I wonder if you could contrast for me your experience of being raised as a child with how you raised your child, either personally or how you feel about things in general, how things have changed from one generation to the next.
Well, after all, I'm really looking at three right now. I'm looking at my own childhood, my daughter's childhood, and my grandchildren's childhood. I think that both my daughter and my grandchildren have a much healthier atmosphere than I had. I was brought up in an atmosphere of continuous social I can't think of the word I want, continuous social activity, parties, and things that I must do that I didn't want to do. And one of the things that was a very uncomfortable thing for me in my youth was that the fact that I had to go to my mother's friend's children's parties, and I had to have them at my house, and I had to go out with them, and I had to invite them, and I was really forced to associate with a lot of people that I didn't care for at all. Also, many decisions were made for me that I think I should have been allowed to make for myself. There was never an unhappier child than I was when I left for camp, as I already stated in this interview. I believe parents should make decisions for children, but there are some things that the child should be allowed to determine. And I tried very hard not to do this with my daughter. It was very hard for me. It still is very hard for me. There are some things that I think that my daughter should do that she doesn't do in relation to my friends and some of my family, and sometimes I can't help myself. I still say that I would like it, but I try very hard not to, because this was something that was just forced so on me. And I see my daughter raising her children with much more freedom in this regard, and I think this is very good. I think also that there is sometimes too much freedom with the very young children today. I think that they need to be more disciplined than they are very often. And I also find this hard to control. I'm a very domineering, directing sort of person. And I find it very difficult to not impose my views strongly. And sometimes I do when I know I shouldn't. But as a whole, I think that the atmosphere my daughter grew up in and that her children are growing up in is a healthier atmosphere than I grew up in.
Let's backtrack a little bit and tell me about your early married life insofar as concerns neighborhoods and perhaps the beginnings of your husband's law practice in relationship to what Pittsburgh was like at that time.
Well, when we were married, we really had no money. We were married practically at the height of the Depression. And money was extremely tight. My husband came from a family with absolutely no money. And my family had really never had money, even though they lived as though they did. And now they really had none. And though we always had help in the house and that sort of thing, we were really feeling very poor. In spite of all this, we had a very lovely wedding, and Jack and I had the usual, I don't remember whether it was 10 days or 2 week honeymoon. And we came home, and then we lived at my mother's house, my mother and father's house. My husband insisted that he pay, so we paid $8 a week
to my mother. Was this something fairly typical of young marrieds at that time?
Well, there were many young marrieds who were living with their parents because they simply could not afford to live any other way. And we lived at home for about a year, maybe even a year and a half. In the meantime, my husband, as I said, earned $900 the first year that we were married. I went to work for my father then, who, as I mentioned before, had a china and glass store. And
what was the name of it?
C. Risenstein Sons. And I went to work for him as a bridal secretary, which was something very new and very avant-garde, really. I interviewed girls who were going to be married and took them around, and they selected what they wanted in china and silver and glass and so on. and we made a list, and then people who wanted to buy presents for them came. In the meantime, Jack really was sitting in his office most of the time. And then he got a very good client. He became the executive secretary of the Tobacco Distributors of Western Pennsylvania. And this paid him $5,000 a year, which was a fortune to us. So we moved out, and we rented a very nice, it was a, I don't know what you call it, it was like a duplex. There were two, but it wasn't a duplex, a quadruplex. I don't know. There were two apartments on the downstairs and two on the upstairs, and each one had one bedroom and a bath and so forth. And we had great fun furnishing it, and I went to New York and selected my furniture with an aunt of mine, and we settled down to housekeeping. And no sooner had we settled down and everything was just going beautifully when Jack's organization disbanded, and he was out of a job and out of $5,000 a year. So we began to struggle again. And it was a long, hard struggle. And as far as the neighborhoods in which we lived, we had moved in with my mother and father, who at that time were living in a duplex on Forbes Street, right next to where Temple Sinai is now. And that duplex still stands. And we, as I said, we lived there a year, year and a half. And from there, we moved to another area of Squirrel Hill. We moved to Northumberland Street. And most of our friends were in the same position that we were in, and because we traveled with a good many professional people. And they were all young and all just getting started, so that it was really quite a struggle.
What was the year and date of your daughter's birth? When was your daughter born?
March 28th, 1941.
It's a good thing your daughter's doing this interview.
You're right. Oh, I told you at the beginning, I can never remember any figures.
Okay, tell me some of the things that might have evolved during, due to the eruption of World War II.
Well, you mean in our private lives? Because Jack wanted very much to.
In your private lives, and also anything that you might have, recalled from your community, rallies, whatever.
Well, I had a new baby, so I was very busy. I was not active in rallies or in anything like this. However, Jack was very unhappy. He wanted very much to be in the service. And I was very much opposed to his being in the service. I felt that if they wanted him, they would come for him. And if they came for him, this was time enough for him to enroll. I thought that here we were, a family now of three, and we had no money to fall back on. And I had a new baby, and that it was unfair for him to go and fight unless he really had to go and fight, and then I wanted him to go if he had to go. But as long as he absolutely didn't have to go, I did not want him to go, and I would do anything to block his going. So he went down, and he got all the papers to enlist in the Navy. And I raised a great rumpus, and I said that if he enlisted in the Navy, I really didn't know what would happen to us. And at any rate, he finally decided that maybe I was right. And so he did a great deal of volunteer work. He worked in the hospital. He made soup at Heinz's. He was a neighborhood warden. He did everything he possibly could without registering to fight. And at the same time, I was very frightened because some of the boys that we knew very well had done what Jack had done and had been killed. And
they had enlisted.
They had enlisted. Two boys in particular. One, it was Rose Alpern, Rose White's first husband, who was a cousin of mine. His name was Fleischman. And another one was Helen Domasek, Bob Domasek enlisted. And both these boys, who were good friends of ours, were killed. And maybe this helped to keep Jack from enlisting. And they were tough years all the way around, those years, in many ways.
Tell me something about, as a married couple now, somewhat of your religious life. You mentioned that you were from a very Reformed background, your husband was from a very Orthodox background. Coming from two opposite corners of the ring, so to speak, where did this lead you in your religious affiliation and synagogue membership and so forth?
We both felt very strongly about belonging to a synagogue and belonging to the Jewish community. And when we were married, before we were married, I asked Jack if he would like me to keep a kosher house for him and follow in the traditions in which he had been raised. And he said absolutely not, because he did not really believe in those traditions any longer. But he was a very, very ardent, very devoted Jew, but he did not believe in the Orthodox tradition any longer. So, of course, this pleased me, because I wasn't dying to do it, though I would have done it. So we joined Rod of Sholem. We were married by the rabbi of Rod of Sholem Temple, and we were also married by the rabbi of the of B'nai Israel, which was a conservative synagogue. It so happened that Jack's mother was very close to this rabbi's family. So we had two rabbis officiate at our wedding. And we always respected Jack's mother's orthodoxy. We were both quite heavy smokers, but when mother came to our house, we did not smoke on the Sabbath. If we were at her house, we did not smoke on the Sabbath. I never served meat at my table when she was at my table, even if it was for a week at a time. And we did our very best to honor her feelings. But as far as we were concerned, we lived as participating and interested Jews in a Jewish community.
Do you remember recall who the rabbis were at that time at Rod of Sholem and B'nai Israel?
Yes. Solomon Freihoff was the rabbi at Rod of Sholem. And Benjamin Lichter was the rabbi at B'nai Israel. And a sweet man he was.
Okay, you touched a little bit upon the fact that you were participating Jews within the Jewish community and so forth. I'd like you to go into that a little bit more. I'd like you to tell me your experiences and your roles in various organizations that you have touched and that have touched you, and also your husband's.
Well, let me go into Jack's first. Shall I do that? Jack was never terribly active in the Jewish community when he was younger. He was working very hard. He was never particularly interested in the, nor was I, as a matter of fact, in the organizations surrounding the synagogue, the Brotherhood, the Sisterhood, and so on and so forth. However, he was on the board of the Hebrew Institute at one time, and then he resigned from that voluntarily because he felt he had missed too many meetings. He had too many business meetings at night, and he felt that he was not giving it his full time. He simply resigned from it. At a later date, he was president of the Jewish Family and Children's Service, and thereby sat on the board of the United Jewish Federation. And I think that those were the only two things in which he really deeply, naturally, he was a member of the Zionist organization and of many, many Jewish organizations. But these were his two active participations, and I would say that really the only one was the Jewish Family and Children's Service. I, on the other hand, belonged also to a great many Jewish organizations, the Ladies Hospital Aid, Hadassah, Council of Jewish Women, One Time Technion. I don't believe I belong to that any longer. I could go on, almost every Jewish organization. At one time, I did a great deal of work for the Council Bulletin, and I did a job for, I did spot jobs for different organizations, but I never really got deeply interested until I became involved with the United Jewish Federation. I started at the United Jewish Federation as a worker in their general division by taking some cards, and I ended up as chairman of their fundraising. This was before there was a women's division as such. The women's division then was simply a part of the general fundraising set up by the Federation, not a separate organization in itself. And I did everything along the way. I did. I was chairman of general solicitation, and then I was chairman of advanced gifts, and then I was their general chairman, and I served for many years with the United Jewish Federation.
Now I'd sort of like to veer off the track here and go to another whole side that we've really just skimmed. And that is your involvement with art. I'd sort of like to pick it up when you leave Peabody and go to New York. You've touched a little bit about on the Art Students League, and if you'd like to go into that a little deeper, fine. And then I'd like you to come back to Pittsburgh. I'd like you to tell me what's going on in Pittsburgh and where Pittsburgh has, come from and gone to in the last 40 years.
All right. Well, as I say, I went to the Art Students League in New York, and I'll just touch a little more on that. It was a very free life that I led in those days. I lived, as I said, at the Parnassus Club, and I lived there for about a year, and then I moved into an apartment that a lady had, and she rented out about three rooms in that apartment. And I, as I say, I lived a very free life with no supervision whatsoever, and at this stage I was 18 years old. And it was, in a way, too bad, because I had perfect freedom to come and go as I wanted to at the school that I went to. No one ever cared whether you went or you didn't go. There was no such thing as a roll call. And it was really for very mature artists. And, of course, the classes were marvelous. But I would say that I attended maybe 75% of the classes. And I was much too busy having a good time in New York. And then, as I said, I came back here and I studied with a man at the university by the name of Reed Hasty.
Could you
spell that for me? Yes, Reed, R-E-I-D-H-A-S-T-I-E. He was really a very talented man, and I learned a great deal from him. And then in the midst of all this, I became ill. And I was finally decided that I had tuberculosis. And I spent the next year of my life in bed. And this was when I was about 20. And then when I recovered from this, I continued there. And I painted, and nothing very much was happening to me. I mean, I was interested in what I was doing, and that was about it. Then I got married, and then I had a baby a few years later, and it was after the baby was, I think she must have been, I think Jane must have been at least 10 years old when I decided to go back to painting. And then I went to the YMWHA, and I studied with a man by the name of Sam Rosenberg, who was really a most marvelous teacher.